Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Save up to $450 on a Gibson Les Paul Studio Deluxe, up to $900 on a Gibson Les Paul Trad Pro 4, or save up to 20% on other select Gibson guitars. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Today I was joined by Caitlin Cooper of IndyCornrows.com. Caitlin Cooper is a fellow co-worker of mine at IndyCornrows. She's a fantastic writer. She's got great knowledge about the Pacers. She goes to all their press conferences and events. She is just tuned into the Pacers like I've never seen anybody before. There's a little bit of a sound quality issue. You know, we had a little bit of issues recording. I did it through Skype instead of Google Hangouts. It's not a big deal. It's still very listenable. She's great on it, and I hope to have her on later this year to go even more in depth. So if you have a little bit of an issue, you know, I understand. But still, you can hear it, and it's great. You'll really enjoy today's podcast with Caitlin Cooper.
Caitlin Cooper from IndyCornrows.com. She's an editor there. She's a staff writer there. She writes incredible stuff on the Pacers, and I believe she has a Miles Turner article coming out later this week. But today, she's joined me to talk about Lance Stephenson as part of the Locked On Pacers player previews. How are you doing, Caitlin?
I'm good. I was surprised that I was invited to talk about Lance because last year I was accused of a Lance media conspiracy when I wrote my it wasn't really negative, I guess I would say. I was a little bit concerned about the roster redundancy and Al Jefferson and how his fit would be back with the team, and I definitely underestimated how much an effect his spark would have late in the season last year. So good to get to talk about him in a positive light, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, you could take
a little
it any
semi-positive.
Yeah, you could take it any way you're like. You know, I want you to give me your raw Lance Stephenson opinions. I know there's a range of them out there. You know, I'm a fan of him personally just because I have fond memories of him, but there are people out there that I know there are many in Pacer land that just don't like Lance. You know, in case people forget, Lance will be, I guess it would technically be his sixth season with the Pacers. He played four previously, then he came in towards the end of last season. He played like six games, then played the playoffs. He had a little bit of spark to the bench in the playoffs. You know, he did Lance things. He couldn't shoot the three incredibly well, but he made some exciting plays and all kinds of stuff like that. So, you know, I just want to start it off. My first question to you basically is, what did you think of the Lance signing and were you okay with it?
In the immediate, it was tough because most of last season I wouldn't have been because they already had Monte. They already had Rodney Stuckey early in the year when that was first kind of those rumbles were out there. And then the elephant in the room was the fact that he and Al Jefferson were incredibly inefficient together in Charlotte. They had the worst two-man net rating of any pairing that played over 900 minutes in Charlotte that year. So my assumption being that he was going to come in and come off the bench, I was worried about all of those factors. But as it turns out, you know, Monte slowly diminishes and becomes sad Monte before our eyes, and Rodney's too hurt to play. So clearly Lance was an immediate upgrade over both of them, and certainly as a rebounder he's an automatic upgrade too. And then I think they made some, to Nate McMillan's credit, I'll say, they made some shifts in how they used him that I don't think that Nate McMillan would have been willing to make at the beginning of the year, because over those last six games, they finally, you know, they moved Aaron Brooks off ball, let Lance run point, which they didn't do with Monte or Rodney, and that gave him a shooter to put beside him, and then they shortened the rotation late in the season, and most of the time they would have CJ and Paul George out there to provide even more shooting, and then they benched Al Jefferson and used Kevin Serafin, who's a little bit better equipped to roll to the basket and hit from the elbow than what Al Jefferson showed last year. So I'm not sure they actually would have made those tweaks at game one that Nate McMillan was willing to make at game 78, but, you know, so I think that even if Lance's three-point shooting drops off, I think that he can have a very effective season next year if they put him in the right position to do so.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said about Lance. I was okay with them bringing him back only because Stuckey got hurt, so he was off the team basically. He got cut, I think, even before Lance was brought in or around then. Monte had faded into basically being, you know, you hold your breath within the game, that they don't blow too much of a lead. And so Lance was just a little more, he's like a younger version of Monte, not as good as Monte was in his younger days, but he's faster, he's better on defense. You know, he may not be the scorer Monte could be, but, you know, Monte wasn't healthy, I don't think. And I think at a 30-plus-year-old Monte Ellis compared to a 20, I think Lance is 24, 25 at this point, you know, that's a huge difference, you know, defensive-wise. Because Lance, for all his flaws, when he's engaged in the game and playing with intensity, he's a pretty decent defender. I mean, you know, he has the shenanigans where he blows in LeBron's ear and all that stuff. We all remember those. But, you know, there were times when he was locked in with the Pacers, at least back in the day, where he would be the second best defender on the Pacers team behind Paul George. He could come in and kind of help Paul George out. I mean, I remember, you know, in the playoffs against the Heat, he, you know, Lance did a really good job of guarding Dwayne Wade, and this is even when Dwayne was kind of still in his prime. So, you know, I like Lance on this roster, especially I like Lance for the incredibly cheap amount of money they got him for. I mean, the contract of like $2.5 million for a guy who could be a quality role player is incredible.
Right, and I like him even better after some of the stuff that was said at the golf outing yesterday, because Nate McMillan definitively said that he plans on Lance being the sixth man, which I think is the perfect role for him. I prefer to have him running point off the bench than to be playing any of the other positions, because he is so dynamic with the basketball and when shooters around him, and because he tends to get disengaged when he doesn't have the ball. So if they're going to run him as backup point, and they're going to use the right lineups, which I think we'll probably get into maybe later, I think it's a good signing, and you're right. At 4.36, I think he has a team option next year. And Lance even mentioned yesterday off the cuff that it was his hope that he would retire with the Pacers someday. So he's definitely committed to being here, and you can tell that the Pacers are committed to him long-term because they're putting him in all this promotional material, having him in those pictures with the new jerseys early on. They're giving him a fan section. So, you know, I think that it probably has the potential to be a better pairing than what I would have anticipated last year with how that roster was a year ago at this time.
Yeah, and you just, obviously you could have figured out what was going to happen with Paul George, and that Lance has basically now become, I mean, until Miles Turner kind of takes that next step and becomes the best Pacer, I think, player on the roster, Lance is kind of the fan favorite right now. He's the hype guy. He's the, everybody's excited to watch him. He just kind of like, you know, you would pay to watch. He's the one player on the team you say, hey, I'm going to pay to see Lance Stephenson because he's going to be do something crazy. He might make an incredible play. He's going to kind of hype the fans up. So, you know, you always need that kind of player. I don't know if they're really long-term. I know he wants to be here long-term now after his struggle with every other team. But I think, you know, they have all these player option on him. So, basically, he's playing year to year. And, I mean, at the right price, he'll be here. But, I can't predict where they're going to be in 3 or 4 years just because I don't know where this team is heading exactly. But I want to touch on your sixth man. So, you know, I know you said Pritchard said he's going to be kind of the sixth man backup point guard. Do you think Lance is better off at playing backup point guard or playing the backup shooting guard position?
Oh, I definitely think he's better at the point guard position. I mean, I think the little sample size with that lineup I mentioned earlier, they outscored opponents by 25.5 points per 100 when Lance was running point next to Aaron Brooks off ball. I mean, I just think he has a tendency. You saw this when he played with the Clippers. Theoretically, the personnel that the Clippers had should have maximized Lance's talent. They had the shooters. They run a lot of pick and roll heavy offense, but he didn't have the same effect there that he's had in Indiana's. In part because he gets disengaged when he doesn't have the ball. He tends to have some lapses there. And I can't say definitively that that will happen again, but I just think to get the most out of him, especially since I expect his shot to regress from what it was over those six games, I think he's better with the basketball. So
I'll take a quick break from today's Locked On Pacers podcast player preview to talk about SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the presenting sponsor of the Locked On Pacers podcast, and SeatGeek is my favorite ticketing site to buy tickets to concerts and sporting events. SeatGeek is great for basically two reasons. One, they have a fee included price. That means you don't get surprised by the end price. You know, some sites, if you go on, you get one price for ticket, and when you check out, it's a whole nother price, and it's usually like $20 more. This time on SeatGeek, you log on, you see the price, they tell you the price, it's what it is. There's no, you know, hidden price. It's $45 a ticket. It's $45 a ticket. You don't have to pay anything more than that. You know what you're paying. The second thing is that SeatGeek tells me whether I'm getting a good deal on my ticket. They have a thing called a deal score, which is a great formula to determine whether you're paying more or less than you should be paying. If the little dot on shows up on the ticket, if it's a green dot, meaning it's like 70 or higher, you're getting a great deal on your ticket. You're not being, you know, overcharged for the ticket. You know, SeatGeek is one of the best ticket aggregating sites, and if you use the promo code LOMBA, you get a $20 discount off your first purchase. So this year, when you go to buy Pacer tickets, make sure to use the promo code LOMBA so they know that you are a listener of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Now back to today's Locked On Pacers preview episode.
And then, so I'm going to move on to, I agree with you on that one too. I think they're going to move Joseph to the two more anyways. But I wanted to move on to some of the lineups too. I know you've hit on them a bunch. We hit them early on a little bit. So I'm moving to some of the lineups Lance will play in. So I kind of wrote it down that I think Lance can kind of come in and play in some interesting three-guard lineups in a sense. So maybe a Collison, Lance, Oladipo lineup. Maybe you throw in Turner and then you get in Bogdanovich as like the three-point shooter kind of play. So what would you think of that if Lance kind of a three-guard lineup?
Well, I'm thinking that, like, here I am just piggybacking off of sort of what I already said. But, yeah, I like Collison because he's improved his three-point shooting year over year. Every year he was in Sacramento, and that's something he's worked really hard on. So you can – theoretically, he's used to being moved off ball from the year that he played with Rondo. He has experience with that. So if you want to shove him to the two, that's a good one. And I like the idea of using interchangeable forwards with Lance. So even if you wanted to try in small bursts, you know, Bogdanovich with Glenn Robinson, and then, yeah, he needs to have a pick-and-roll capable center with him on the floor as much as possible. So either, you know, Sabonis or Miles Turner is going to be preferable over Al Jefferson. So, yeah, I think I would be pretty close to that. I'm also interested in, because you don't know, that's going to be best for the spacing. But in the switch everything in terms of defense, I want to see them experiment more with that this year. So, you know, maybe you try Lance and Oladipo and Glenn Robinson III and Thad and Sabonis. And you don't know if that in practice is going to work out as it should in theory based on their physical measurements and their athleticism. If it does, then the floor spacing is not going to be as important because hopefully they can get up and down the floor and score in the open court. But, you know, that's a big if. So
you aren't buying into a skinny Al Jefferson running a pick and roll with Lance?
I'm very skeptical about skinny Al Jefferson, which will be, I hope to have a column on that over the weekend. I know a lot of people are excited about it, but I mean, I already think that there's pretty good evidence of how Lance and Al work together on the books. And just because he's skinny isn't going to alter what type of player he is. Like his energy, I'm sure, is going to be improved. Thad had a little antidote yesterday at the golf outing where he told a story about Al Jefferson diving on the floor to get a ball and just that he was pretty surprised by that occurrence, which based on last year and how slow he looked, but I mean, that type of stuff's going to be good in terms of them being able to get up and down the floor a little bit more and not waiting for till the 18-second mark on the shot clock for him to get across half court. But it isn't going to change the fact that he's still a post-heavy player that's going to be in the way on the block. So, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I had to bring up because of, you know, the whole blown up yesterday on Twitter. I think Twitter was when they saw the picture of Jefferson and started just kind of going around. So I had to bring up just the skinny on Jefferson because, yeah, you know, you never know. I you know, I agree with everything you said. He's still kind of just because his skin doesn't mean he got faster. Like he might not be, you know, lugging down the last 2 seconds of a shot clock, but he might still take 6 or 7 seconds to get down the court. So, you know, I agree with you on all that. So, let's keep going on lineup sort of. I know I took off topic for a second, but so you brought up the Thad, Oladipo, Glenn Robinson, Stevenson at basically the point guard, and then Turner at the five. So I wrote this lineup 2 weeks ago now because I think this is like the most interesting lineup the Pacers can run personally because it's their basically Warriors version where they can switch everything at all times. You know, the way Warriors do they're all switching on defense. So I like Lance in that position just because I think he can guard anything from a small forward to a point guard in a sense, which is like incredibly valuable for anybody. The question is on that type of lineup, I think Oladipo ends up sliding into the point guard more just because Oladipo could be a more traditional guard than like point guard than Stevenson is because of Stevenson's decision making. So when it comes to Stevenson's decision making, how much do you think the Pacers should trust him to be kind of the point guard?
Well, I think you got to take the good with the bad there. I agree with you in that you're going to have possessions with Lance where the ball is probably going to stick and he's going to dance with the ball and waste a lot of the shot clock. But at the same time, he does have exceptional court vision when the offense runs, and a lot of that goes back to Nate McMillan. How much of the offense this year is going to be, you know, getting the ball to one of the guards, and inbounding it to one of the wings, and then the wing trying to either dribble or, you know, pass it into Jefferson or whoever it's going to be. If it stalls, that I'm just very skeptical about how much movement Nate McMillan's going to implement into the offense. I'll just say that. A lot of that's going to depend on how much the ball stalls with Lance. Is if they're getting off ball movement with either Bogdanovich or Robinson, how much, if they can get that, then I don't worry as much about Lance dribbling around with the ball as I do if the offense looks like it did last year.
Yeah, that would be a worry of mine. It's just him standing there, the guy, the base of his defender playing 5 feet off of him because he can't shoot the three sometimes and clogging up the whole offense. You know, a famous thing of Lance to do is to kind of clog up lanes either because he has the ball and nobody respects his 3-point shot, or he doesn't stand in the corner far enough away, so he clogs up kind of those shooting lanes at times. You know, I my biggest memories of Lance are from his old days with the Pacers when he used to kind of, when the Pacers with those bigger lineups, and Lance used to kind of would cheat too much in off the corner, and they would end up clogging up lanes for Paul George to get to the rim at times, and it was just frustrating to watch. You know, I mean, especially if the Pacers are trying to play faster. You know, I mean, they may not have the offensive talent to score 110 points a game, but they're going to try to because it's the kind of team that they've brought in. And so, you know, I think Lance can fit that if he can develop his 3-point shot and, you know, more consistently. He was one of the worst 3-point shooters in the league, basically, while he wasn't with Indiana. So maybe he can get him up to, you know, even like low 30s. That would be, you know, if he gets low 30s, at least that's like respectable. You have to kind of guard that at times. So, you know, stats wise for next season, where do you see Lance landing? You know, does he end up even with 10 points a game, you think?
A lot of that's going to depend on guard rotation because, I mean, how many minutes are all four of them going to get and where are the minutes going to come from? I mean, it sounds to me like from Nate McMillan's standpoint yesterday that he plans on featuring Lance as a sixth man, as a number, you know, top option off the bench. So in that regard, then, yeah, 10 points is within reason. If it isn't, if it turns out that he's not manning that much of the point guard duties and it's more Corey Joseph and Darren Collison, then maybe not. And also, it kind of comes down to, two, where is Glenn Robinson in this picture? You know, we still don't know exactly where he's going to be starting. If he's a starter, he's probably not going to get as many touches as he will as a bench player. I mean, you can go back and forth with where he should be. But I think 10 points can be realistic if he's handling the ball, because then obviously he's going to be more in control of his own destiny. But, yeah.
Yeah, Lance has to be basically the featured guard. I mean, he's going to be battling with Joseph, depending on who's going to play kind of backup point guard, backup shooting guard minutes, because the majority of those, he'll be battling Joseph that, I think, throughout the training camp and basically throughout the beginning of the season, because, you know, as much as I love Lance because of his Indiana ties, I'm not sure how much better he is than Joseph, just if you take him stats by stats over the last 3 years. Joseph probably even has a little bit better stats because he's a better three-point shooter and has been more productive for a better team. But, you know, as the Indiana, if you're kind of Indiana homerish, like, you know, you're feeling the ties to Lance, you think Lance can play 20 minutes a game and put up 10 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, kind of thing like he used to do. But like you said, it's all based on minutes, right? I mean, if he doesn't, you know, I don't think he's going to play small forward. I think Robinson's going to be the backup small forward. So if Lance can get 20 minutes a game, he'll get 10 points. But if he doesn't get there, I'm not really sure how he gets above 10 points. He gets to 10 points, he doesn't get more than like 10 or 15 minutes a game. So then, you know, you talked about Lance being in the sixth man role, and so I wonder, though, is he really the sixth man, or is Glenn Robinson going to be the sixth man? Or is it like the idea that Pacers have more than one sixth man?
Well, exactly. And, you know, I mean, I'm just taking that from Nate McMillan's word, but I worry somewhat about Glenn Robinson, not because of his work ethic or because I don't think he has potential, because I do. I like his ceiling, and I like where he's trending and what I wrote a piece, this, if anybody wants to look at it, it's pinned on my profile, where I talked to his trainer and got some exclusive videos from them on some of the stuff he's been working on. But you got to take into account that that's why it's tricky on whether he should be the starter, should come off the bench, because really what needs to be the biggest thing is that he needs to get the most minutes out of small forward, and he needs to play wherever he's going to get the most touches. So to me, it sounded like from Nate McMillan's perspective that he's planning on that being Lance, but I mean, how many young prospects do the Pacers really have and looking forward into their future? I mean, to me, they need to put a lot of their eggs into Miles Turner and Glenn Robinson III. But, I mean, Glenn Robinson's only 23 years old. Sometimes it's easy to forget that he's actually younger than Joe Young.
Yeah, that's – Joe Young is a very, very old for at least in terms of, like, you consider young point guards, he's like, I think he's 25. Remember, Joe went to 4 years of college versus Lance, I think, went to one, and Robinson went to, I think, two, right, at Michigan?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, so so with going back to Lance, so his contract, you know, we touched on a little bit at the beginning how he's pretty cheap. So he's got player options the next two seasons. So assuming he plays well, those get picked up. You know, financial-wise, where do you see him costing the Pacers after the next two seasons? You know, what's his next contract after this one?
That's tough because I want to believe that in a contract year, and especially with the tumultuous kind of career trajectory he's had since coming back to Indiana, that he's going to have a big season, similar to what Rodney Stuckey had when he was on the 1 year. And, you know, so if he has a pretty decent season, would he get paid similar to what the Pacers offered Rodney Stuckey before they had to waive him last year? I mean, I think that seems reasonable depending upon where the salary cap is. I mean, that's what I would hope they would pay him. I don't want them to overpay him to keep him here, especially if his three-point shooting goes back down to where it was in Charlotte levels, then, you know, that isn't – I wouldn't want him to pay more than that, I guess I should say. What was your thought?
Yeah, I know I gave you a tough question because I'm struggling with this one too. That's why I asked your opinion on it. I know with – you know, it's interesting because he's basically playing like on a year-to-year contract, right? If he was almost out of the league, basically, you know, he was a fringe NBA player until he got brought back by the Pacers last year and proved to be better than that. So he has to prove himself every year. He has to go out there and he has to consistently play, which is a good incentive for him. It's good. The Pacers got a really good end of the deal on Lance because where he position was in his career, where he was kind of falling out of the league, they were able to basically dictate all the terms, which was great. You know, I commend Bird on doing that. You know, I think in 2 years, if he, you know, can step into, I mean, I don't want to say he's going to be the starting point guard because I don't think he has the, you know, ability not to turn over the ball too little to become the starting point guard. But, you know, there's a chance in 2 years, you know, the team's going to look different. I mean, Bogdanović probably won't be on the roster. Collinson probably won't be on the roster. There'll probably be another two rookies. So, you know, it's going to depend how much of a discount Lance wants to take to stay here because I don't think they're going to pay him, you know, upwards more than $10 million unless he's having, like, an incredible, you know, career run, and maybe if he puts up, you know, 15 points a game and kind of that, he'll get that kind of money. But, you know, I do agree with you. I see sort of a $7 to $8 million range probably. And if he really wants to stay here, you probably could see a three-year contract, you know, at 25 and then, you know, a player option for the fourth or whatever is like that after this 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we touched on earlier about the fact that he is a fan favorite, I mean, I think the Pacers are going to be aware of that whenever they go into the next deal that they'll – I don't think they'll overpay. I'm not going to say that because I think Kevin Pritchard very much is intent on paying people appropriate value. But yeah. I think they have an interest in keeping him around.
Yeah, but you talk about fan favorite. But, like, if Miles Turner ends up becoming a 20-point-a-game scorer, is it – you know, are we sure fans are just going to be like, well, who cares about Lance? Miles Turner is our superstar. Like, you know, he's kind of like right now because the team is in such kind of flux, he's the fan favorite, the guy that people want to see. But, you know, If Oladipo becomes a really successful player, you know, 20 points a game, he'll become the fan favorite because of his IU ties. Or if Turner becomes a, you know, we hope a top 15 player someday in the next couple of years, he'll become the fan favorite. So I'm not really worried about that. I'm more thinking that Lance just wants to stay here because he realizes once he left the culture of Indiana, it was like he wasn't successful. Basically, he should have stayed 3 years ago. He should have re-signed, and I think he realized that, so I don't think he wants to leave.
Right. Well, right. Yeah, exactly, from his perspective. I mean, and you mentioned, too, that the starting point guard thing, you know, I was never on board with that simply because of Miles Turner's development. Like what you said earlier, opponents, during the playoffs, Kevin Love was basically playing free safety off of Lance in those bench units and daring him to shoot. And to Lance's credit, he did knock down some of those shots, but it does kind of grind the offense to a halt while he's trying to prove, you know, make opponents honest. So in that regard, that wouldn't have been great this year for all the people that kind of clamored for Lance to be the starting point guard. Do you really want opponents sagging into the paint when you're trying to get the most out of Miles Turner in his first year with Paul George not being here and hoping that his usage goes up? So, I mean, I think I always try to filter things through Miles Turner's lens, you know, with all of these. There's give and take with each one of them because with Darren Collison, you like the shooting. You like that he has experience with regard to DeMarcus Cousins punching the ball ahead and relocating for the shot. With Corey Joseph, I like the idea that Miles Turner's going to get to play with another guard that hopefully can get up over the top of screens and plays with more tenacity on the defensive end than Jeff Teague ever did last year. So how they're going to balance those minutes should be interesting in getting the most out of each one of the four main guards that they have.
Yeah, and last year in the playoffs, even Lance hit a couple of threes. Then he became really hesitant late in the game, and that stalled the offense a ton. And I think with him, sometimes he just shoot the three. I mean, he's got to just get the shot and shoot it instead of getting it kind of looking around, you know, nobody's playing on him, and then he shoots, because that just stalls everything. So, maybe he's probably in the gym. He's probably working on a three-point shot. So, you know, we can all hope he gets above 30%, and then he gets to be respected at least by some of the time. You know, he doesn't have to be a Darren Collison type three-point shooter. If he was, he'd be incredible and then be worth more than what we were talking about earlier. But if he becomes even just low 30s, that's respectable, and it's, you know, good enough. And then that could help, you know, like you said, help Miles turn around, because if people are having to guard Lance up, their Turner's going to get more space down low and more ability to move the ball. And Lance can use some of his driving kick ability and draw, you know, because he's really fast and he's really good at getting to the rim, so he can do kind of things like that. So, you know, he's going to be kind of a critical part in helping this offense flow, at least when he comes off the bench, because he's probably, like you said, going to be the second guy off the bench. So he's going to play a lot of minutes with Turner, because Turner should play like 35 minutes. So I want to move on just like the ending of this. So I know I touched on it earlier, but what if you had to just give me concrete, what do you think Lance Stephenson's stats are at the end of the year?
Ooh, that's tough. Well, I'm more bullish on his rebounding than I am on the rest, because that's going to be a point of emphasis for the Pacers. So let's go with, predictions. This is hard. Let me see what he had with the Pacers over the last six games here.
Yeah, what you said about rebounding, I agree with that. On the last podcast, when I was discussing it, like, the rebound is going to be a huge weakness for this team, so Lance should be able to kind of do what he did earlier with the Pacers, and that is just feast on going down low and getting garbage time rebounds, getting, like, those free throw rebounds, all that kind of stuff.
Let's go with, I'll hedge a little bit. Let's go with 8 to 10 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists on, let's hope, let's cross our fingers and hope, 40% shooting.
All right.
And let's hedge the middle, since he shot, I'm looking here, he shot 62% from three, which, you know, obviously is sustainable. And he shot 17% in his historically bad season in Charlotte. So let's just hope he finds, like, a respectable middle there around between, you know, 30 and 35.
Yeah.
That's me going out on a ledge.
Yeah, I think points-wise, I'm about 8 points, I think, a game. I think making 3 shots and 2 free throws is a reasonable way for him. I mean, and then, you know, rebounds, he might get up to 5. You know, assists, 2 or 3. I think he's going to get 15 minutes a game to start. I think he can earn his way more to get more minutes, but I think at the start he's going to play between 13 and 15 and basically just back up Oladipo the entire time. And I think they're going to try to play Joseph at point guard, at least to start the season. You know, 3-point shooting, you nailed it. You know, 30% is probably where hopefully should be at. If he's below that, then he's not going to get 8 points a game, because he's not going to play more minutes. So hopefully it's 30%. That's like knock on wood hope.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, Kalen, thank you for joining me. I know you're writing about Miles Turner for the top 101 players in 2021. So do you want to just talk about that real quick?
Yeah, sure. That actually went up right before we talked, because SB Nation's main site, for people who may not know, have been projecting who they think the top 101 players in 4 years will be. So Miles Turner came in the top 25 at number 22. So I thought that was a pretty bold pick, and I compared him to some other, let's call them multi-dimensional bigs that'll still be around then, and tried to see if we thought that 22 is a reasonable pick or not. So that's up, and I hope to have a skinny Al Jefferson take up by before media day. So,
all right. I say I was looking for that post because you told me about it, and I looked this morning. I looked like probably up to an hour and a half ago, so I probably just missed it when it posted. So
I just had to add the little blurb to it right before we went on. So
all right, so I'm gonna go read that now, and I recommend everybody else should too. Is it on Indie Cornrows, or is it gonna be on the SB Nation whole site?
It'll be on Indie Cornrows. Yep.
All right. Perfect. Yep. So you can go read Caitlin there, you can read me there, you can read, you know, our boss, Tom Lewis, you know. So, yeah. Okay, thank you, Caitlin, for joining me. And this has been the Locked On Pacers player preview of Lance Stephenson. Have a great afternoon.
Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.